Happy birthday to one Steve Largent. Largent turned 68 today. NFL Hall of Famer. Putnam City, right?
Putnam City.
Putnam City Pirate. Yeah.
Putnam City. In that class with Alvin Adams and Bob Shirley. Adams, a great basketball player. Bob Shirley, the pitcher, and so forth.
Steve
Largent. I mean, Putnam City was cranking out. I mean, they had so much talent back in that day, Pat. And Jerry Potter. Football.
Yeah, Potter was over there.
Jerry Potter.
The home builder. Yeah. Largent's a good guy. Interesting guy. You know, it's Largent was one of these guys, and I remember coaching against him. We were at Arkansas at the time and played Tulsa, and it would have been 74-75 and, you know, beat him pretty good. But, you know, I can remember scouting Tulsa. You know, and Largent was – it wasn't like you're seeing Bob Hayes out there or somebody, man. You know, they're wow. There wasn't a wow.
Right.
But at the end of the day, the guy's going to have, you know, 12 or 15 catches and two touchdowns. You know, and that's kind of the way he was throughout the NFL, really. I mean, as far as – You know, look at it. It's not like it's Jerry Rice or something like that. I was just looking at somebody had Arena Sports, whatever that is. You know, they were making some of their – they had the 40 best NFL receivers of all time and had Largent ranked number 7, you know, and which is real good company. Now, they did leave out Bob Hayes, which was a mistake. But anyway.
Oops.
Largent, it turned 68.
That's pretty good all time. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. So happy birthday to one Steve Largent.
Very nice, Pat. We were just talking first hour. I mean, a ton going on with, obviously, in this conference with OSU-Baylor, with that matchup, which you're going to break down completely tomorrow on the Pigskin Report. We can get some thoughts today. But it's just so much. We've talked a lot of NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, you know, with the start that Jalen Hurts has had, we were talking about Lamar Jackson. His contract situation, the start that he's had, the Dolphins with some of their crazy wins, the comeback win against the Ravens, and then that game against the Bills. I still can't believe the numbers coming out of that game, Pat. So it's just it's a fun time right now in football season.
Well, have y'all made your something we'd gotten into over here? We had ranked the top 8 teams in the in the NFL. Have y'all?
No, we haven't really done. I mean, we've talked about like the rankings that Nate Davis had in USA Today and so forth. We hadn't really done any rankings. So.
Well, first break, get those. And I'd looked at it. I read them like you, Craig.
No, we can do it. I mean, you can do them right now if you want to. Yeah.
Okay, well, I've already done them. So I've got Now, I've got 1 Buffalo, 2 Kansas City, 3 Rams, 4 Philly, 5 Miami, 6 Green Bay, 7 Baltimore, and 8 Tampa. Now, again, I view it, you know, we've talked about this. I view it a little bit differently.
Give me your 6, 7, and 8 again, Pat. I was trying to
six, write. I'm sorry. 6 is six, Green Bay.
6 was Green Bay.
Seven is Baltimore, and 8 is Tampa.
Okay. I've got the same 8 teams, but in a different order. But go ahead and explain how you ranked them.
Well, you know,
some of those teams have played each other and so forth.
Yeah. Oh, heavens, yes. Well, you know, I mean, Miami just beat Buffalo the other day, I guess the way I view it, if right now I had a pretty good, because I do this with colleges too, if I was coaching a pretty good team, you know, who would I least want to go face this weekend?
Okay.
You know, that's kind of part of my rationale, which is can be kind of wacky at times. And you think, well, you know, wait a minute now. Somebody just beats somebody and somebody just beats. How can you with that? In my mind, with you know, obviously, see, and I don't see everybody. But from that standpoint, I rank them that way. Who if I was coaching a team, who would I least want to play this weekend? So
you're saying who has right now, if I was going to say, I'm going to bet on this team to get to the Super Bowl or to win their conference and so forth. This is, you know,
Or who's got the best personnel right now.
Right.
You know, now you might have let one get away from you last week, but still,
you're not ranking them based on what they've
happened last week.
So far
what happened?
First 3 weeks, yeah.
Partially, I guess you can, you know. I mean, to a degree, if somebody's fouling it all up or something, you know. But anyway, I still think Buffalo, Kansas City, to me, you know, and you know, the Rams, you cannot discount them with Aaron Donald. Philly is kind of the newest kid on the block, and I heard y'all talking about him. You know, I think Matt and I are totally in love with what Hurts is doing.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and I'm in love with what they're – well, I say
with
in
the
love.
Roster.
The the Eagles pass rush enough to give a Cowboys fan nightmares. But I mean, as far as what they're doing,
yeah.
you know, looking at it objectively, I mean, they're getting after the quarterback. It's them and Dallas, the two leading sack teams in the NFL. And
there you go.
There's just no substitute for a pass rush.
Matt, have you ranked? Have you got a ranking?
Yeah, yes. I would still go Buffalo 1, and I know they just lost to Miami. I watched, you know, saw the game like everybody else did. I'm still going to go Rams 2, and okay. I know that Buffalo got after L.A., but, I mean, that's kind of why I think Buffalo's really good. I would probably go Kansas City 3 just because I'm still enamored with Mahomes.
I just know,
he's like the great equalizer. Okay, after those three is where it gets really interesting to me. Right now... See, I still really would just as soon not see Tampa on the other sideline. Now, right now, they're all banged up. I understand that. I guess when I make out these rankings, I tend to put the injuries aside and look at it from the standpoint of if everybody's healthy. Now, if a guy's going to be out for the year, I mean, if Brady's out for the year, that changes everything. I know that.
Right.
Philly is playing awful well right now, though. I guess right now I'd probably have to go Philadelphia 4. I could go Miami 5. I could live with that. I mean, heck, they're 3-0, and they've beaten Baltimore, and they've beaten Buffalo. However they did it, they did it.
Right.
Beyond that, I would probably go,
Where do you factor in Aaron Rodgers?
Well, he still gives me nightmares. I guess I would go. I'd probably go Green Bay 6, Tampa 7, Baltimore 8. I think I'd flip flop from yours, Pat. I would probably flip flop Tampa and Baltimore, but you can make a case either way. I mean, Tampa's so banged up right now. That's the deal. Is if they get healthy, I still think. They're a team, you know, with you-know-who at quarterback, and they've got an awfully good roster, too. But they're banged up right now, so I guess I'll have them down there, at 7, I guess I had them. Green Bay, Tampa, Baltimore, 6, 7, 8.
Doggone Lamar Jackson, you know, the sucker, he looks like he's got another MVP type of year going.
We were just talking about it, yeah.
The guy, I know it. The guy's won the Heisman Trophy. He's been the MVP in the league, and like I saw Harbaugh do a PC the other day, I don't remember exact verbiage on it, but basically he was saying, you know, at times he'll just kind of play some street ball, but it's real good street ball. You know, I mean, I don't think he used those terms,
but
that's what
he was saying, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you guys are going at it based on, because it's different, Pat. It's interesting how people rank, like college, the people that rank college football do not do it the way you guys just did that. I mean, they you know what I'm saying? You guys are just ignoring losses, and you're basically saying these are the eight teams I think are the best teams.
Yeah,
right
who
now.
would you rather?
Yeah,
not
these
see.
Are the best teams. You're not factoring in what's happened, you know, on the field. Which in college football they don't do that. College football, they lose a game, you drop them in the rankings. I don't care what poll you're looking at, right?
Well, but, sometimes it depends on when it gets going. I kind of use a combination of both. I still apply when I mess around with these college things. I still kind of apply who I don't want to see. You know,
I know.
Now you're
but
right.
I'm just saying in college football, there's no way a team would lose a game, and like both of you had Buffalo number one. There's no way in a college football poll that they'd lose a game and then they'd put them number one the next week. You know that type of thing.
Sure.
Which I'm not saying you're wrong because I think of. Of a power poll, well, that you're just saying, you know, who your opinion is. Now, I mean, if I'm ranking it like I do, like they do the college rankings and so forth, yeah, you should put Philly, you know, number one right now. But they've played Detroit, Minnesota, and Washington. Well, just because they beat, you know, Detroit, Minnesota, and Washington, does that really mean they're the best team in the NFL? I don't really believe that. But if I was doing a poll this week. I can understand why a Nate Davis would put, like, Eagles 1, Miami. You know, Miami has beaten two of the teams on your list. I mean, with Buffalo and Baltimore and so forth. So I would put right now Philadelphia 1, Miami 2, Buffalo 3, Baltimore 4. I think those two would be the next two. The Rams I would put number 5. KC. Yeah, I mean, the Rams and KC have had some bad performances, but I think that they're really good teams. So, you know, put them 5 and 6, and I'd put Green Bay, Tampa Bay. We all got the same 8 teams. Mm-hmm. I would put them in just maybe a little different. It's hard for me to leave Tampa Bay out right now. I got to put them in at least number 8. And they're the team I picked to win the Super Bowl, but right now they're just all banged up. I mean, do I really think they're the 8th best team right now? No, probably not. At this moment, they're probably not, but I think they will be. So I'm betting on the come too. Right.
But in about 17 games, they'll probably be there. If they're not all beat up.
If they get healthy, which you know, you would assume, and like we said, some of these teams are starting to get healthy, you know, even as we speak. But, no, it's interesting. I'm not disagreeing. I think Buffalo is still the best team in right now. I know they lost a crazy game to Miami, but that's what you're saying. It was a crazy game. They're still the best. If they played next week, you'd bet a lot of money on Buffalo, right?
USA Today's got, 1 Eagles, 2 Dolphins. Okay, 3 Bills, 4 Ravens, 5 Chiefs, 6 Rams, 7 Vikings. That's a little bit high.
I don't understand the Vikings at number 7. I'm not.
Yeah. Packers at 8, Bucks at 9. Matt, they got the Cowboys at 10. So
yeah, that's, in my opinion, probably too high for the Vikings, too high for the Cowboys. I don't think the Cowboys are that much lower than that, but I don't know. Are the Cowboys the 10th best team in the league? I don't know. Maybe they are. Who knows?
Maybe this weekend, I'm awfully gunned up about their defensive unit.
Yeah.
Well, I really like their defensive unit.
They're flying around and hitting people, and believe me, I am too. I hope that whatever made Micah Parsons sick is gone, and I hope DeMarcus Lawrence's foot's okay.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Although the Vikings, Pat, I mean, they did open up with Green Bay and then, had to play at Philly on a Monday night, a team that we're saying is one of the top teams, you know.
You're right.
Then they beat Detroit, and now they got to go to London and play New Orleans and so forth.
I tell you, they got
an interesting game coming up at Miami, October the 16th. Yeah. The Vikings are at Miami, so that's another.
I think the moral of this story is kind of what we've talked about. What makes the NFL so entertaining is there's – you know,
the parody.
Yeah.
It's designed to
do that. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Which college football's not, but, you know, yeah.
But Pat, NFL wise, I mean, you mentioned Jackson, what else? I mean, any other things jump out at you early in the year, storylines NFL wise?
Oh, you know, it's, oh goodness gracious. Let me see here, Craig. I'm just looking at somebody, you know, it's still, like I say, that thing is a marathon. You know, Indianapolis has been a little bit of an underachiever, although they come back and win
last weekend. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pittsburgh looks like to me they're just kind of treading water, Craig. You know, I mean, they could.
Oh, no.
They
yeah, could, they're not. You know, they're not headed anywhere.
You know, they'll probably beat somebody 1 week. Maybe they shouldn't, but, you know, gosh, who knows there. And then, again, Dallas's defensive unit, to me, gives them a chance. It really does.
It's going to keep them in games.
Yeah. Now the one thing, I think I might have picked them for the Super Bowl. That was brilliant. Arizona. Where is Arizona in this thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
They were – well, and, you know, their only win was over the Raiders. And I was about to bring up the Raiders to you at 0-3. I mean, that
– the Raiders are the only 0-3 team.
Now,
right?
I'll say this for Arizona, though. They've gone Chiefs, Raiders, Rams. Now, that's
Sure.
I know the Chiefs got after them pretty good, but I mean that's a pretty tough beginning to the season. Now they get a game at Carolina this week before they have to play the Eagles. Then the schedule maybe for Arizona, at least on paper, softens up a little bit. They've got Seattle, New Orleans, Minnesota, Seattle again before they go Rams 49ers.
Yeah.
I still think if you've got Kyler Murray, you've got a chance.
That's what I was going to say. You know, with Kyler Murray and Lamar Jackson are the two guys that if you're coaching defense, you got to go to the restroom and throw up about it. You know, those kind of thing.
Well, that's what Nate Davis said this morning when he's talking about Arizona. I think he had him ranked number 18, Pat. But he said, here you got Kyler Murray. Now you bring in Marquise Brown. And you got a dink and dunk offense so far that's averaging 5.5 yards per pass attempt. Now, part of that might be the opponents that they play.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. You know, but they're not getting it done. And then you got a team like the Broncos, Pat, who seem to have made every mistake in the book, and they're sitting there at 2-1 right now with the lead in the AFC West.
Good guy. I had a pretty good relationship. I was a couple, 3 years older. So, you know, Pat's gone now. He passed away a few years back, but really good guy. We'd coached together in a couple of all-star type games, and I, you know, through some of the Auburn people, I'd crossed paths with him before. Interesting deal. His first win as a TCU coach, okay, 1992, came against you know who, Coach Jones. They beat us down there 13-11. Now later in 1993, okay, the win that put me over Jim Lookaball to be the winningest coach until Mike went by it, occurred against Pat Sullivan in 93. So there were some interesting quirks about that. You know, Pat's one of the guys that I've always used as an example. You know, and I think he called me on this deal too. You know, LSU actually offered him that job. He had already told his squad that he was going to take the LSU job. And then something got haywire with the buyout. Either something Pat thought LSU had said they were going to take care of it, or some kind of way, you know, and he had a buyout, and it whatever he thought wasn't right, and so he didn't get the LSU job, but he had actually already gone in and told his squad that he was going to had taken the LSU job, and then it blew up. So he's the prime example to me of. You know, yeah, I mean, there's buyouts are buyouts, and they can't prevent guys from taking jobs. So, you know, every time that gets popped up with, you know, players going from wherever and no set out and all this kind of stuff, he's the guy that I've used as an example of. Good guy. Really, well, really, really good guy.
And, of course, you played them in the end of the 71 season.
That's
after
exactly
they lost
right.
the game of the century to Nebraska. They went to the Sugar Bowl to play Auburn. Nebraska, of course, demolished Alabama in the Orange Bowl. But and OU, I think they end up winning the game 40-22, Pat, but it wasn't that close. It was over in the third quarter, you know, and
no,
OU
that's,
was playing reserves. But
I think Jimmy told me, because, you know, again, I think him and Switzer and them stayed up in the press box, and they didn't even go down at halftime. It was some story like that. You're right. It was such a kick in that. What year was that, 71? 71. Yep. I'm looking at the press guide
71
right now.
71 season. I mean, it was 72 sure. Sugar Bowl. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
40-22.
Yeah.
40-22.
But it wasn't that, like I said, it was.
Right, it wasn't
that
close.
It was over early, and I don't know, the Orange Bowl, was it like 38-7 or something like that on Nebraska-Alabama? It was a blowout. Nebraska blowing out Bama after they'd beaten OU in the game of the century. But that was the year that Pat Sullivan won the Heisman.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Pat, I don't know if you – oh, go ahead.
Well, there's some interesting stuff here on the – I was looking at the TCU staff, and there's some interesting interesting stuff on this. And then Matt brought up something real interesting. Of course, Sonny Dykes is a head coach, and his late father was a dear friend of mine. You know, he's gone, and all that. It seemed like all my friends are gone. But anyway, yeah, Spike Dykes. But, you know, now, you know who their offensive coordinator, okay, at TCU is one Garrett Riley, whose brother happens to be?
That'd be Lincoln Riley.
Lincoln Riley.
Folks around here are familiar with him.
Uh-huh. So do you think, will Lincoln and Garrett talk much throughout the week?
I'd be stunned if there wasn't a conversation.
Blood's thicker than water.
Well, correct? I mean, this stuff happens, Pat. I mean, this is, you know that. I mean,
right. Oh, yes. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure this happens even between, like, good friends, not even brothers. I mean,
if you're good friends and you got a relationship with a guy, you're probably going to share some all that.
You know, watch the way they line up against 22 personnel or whatever the case. I mean,
or say, hey, look, every time we did one-on-one drill, this doggone number 24 will bite on a double move every time.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Stuff like that. Yeah,
right.
You know.
You're telling me, even though Ted Roof is OU's defensive coordinator and Garrett Riley is the offensive coordinator for TCU, it's really Lincoln Riley going up against Brent Venables this week.
I don't know yet. I hadn't quite decided. But it is now. Riley is they use two receiver coaches. One of them is Malcolm Kelly, you know, the receiver from OU. Yeah. Good player. Jamarcus McFarland, defensive lineman, played at OU, is their defensive line coach. Now, there's also, you've heard me talk about this guy. It's not an OU connection, but their defensive coordinator is a guy named Joe Gillespie. He's the one that was over here with Montgomery and them at Tulsa for years. He's a West Texas guy. This guy is really a good football coach. I've watched them work out and over the years, and Gillespie's a little older than I thought, but he's one of these guys that could end up being a head coach sometime. This guy is really, really, really good. One of their secondary coaches is a young man named Carlton Buckles, who was over here at Tulsa with him. And then the other receiver coach, okay, is Doug Meacham. Meacham played for us, and you know, he was but a little bit ahead of Mike. You know, Doug played for us over there in 83, 84, 85, was one of these undersized guards that would just try to kill you. You know, and Doug went to KU. He says this is about his second stint down there. Really good guy, worked real hard. Had a couple of shots one time at some head coaching situations. Didn't happen for him, but so there's an interesting group
of
guys.
He was co-offensive coordinator with Sonny Cumbie down there for a while, Meacham and Cumbie.
Right, then he took a job up at KU with the fellow they hired from Texas down there. And anyway, that didn't work out real good.
Was that David Beatty?
It was David
Under
Beatty.
Coach Beatty?
That's exactly right. It was David Beatty. They had some kind of relationship, paid Doug a bunch of money, went up there, and that didn't turn out real good. So Doug ends up going back down there with Patterson, and I think Sonny Dax retains him. And a really good football man. Doug's a good football guy. But there is some interesting connections with this TCU staff and you know, the state of Oklahoma, Oklahoma State University on this TCU staff.
Yeah, Joe Gillespie, Pat, so he was at Tulsa the last six years, defensive coordinator the last 3 years. I didn't realize, Pat, you said he was a Broyles semifinalist twice.
This guy's a good football coach. He really is. I've watched him practice over there. He's enthusiastic. He's got a good way about him. Fundamentally, really, really sound in what they do. And really high on this guy. You know, like I say, I started poking around, exploring a little bit. He's a little older than I realized he was. And again, he's from West Texas out there where Montgomery and them are from. And same place where Lincoln Riley and them out that direction. But anyway, really good football coach. Really good football man.
Well, maybe I'm not giving the TCU defense enough credit, and with what you say on Gillespie, it scares me a little bit now. But it's hard for me to tell just watching the game. I mean, they played at Colorado.
Sure.
We didn't know how bad Colorado was, and TCU, they took care of business. I mean, just beat them pretty bad. Tarleton State was their second game. Then they had a bye week. Then the game at SMU. So it's hard to know how good they are. But I know they got some offensive firepower for sure. So.
Yeah, they do. Now I was looking at these stats. You know, they're 30th in the country in rush defense. So they're hanging in there, you know, and some of this kind of stuff. I'm not saying they're a dominating defensive unit, but they'll get lined up right. I'll promise you, and they'll be sound, and they'll have some change ups to give you, and all this kind of stuff. Like I said, the guy's really a good football coach. But yeah, I mean, Colorado's no good. He's probably going to be about the next one to get fired out there. And then, you know, SMU's got a decent football team. TCU beat them, but gosh, who knows anymore how good anybody is, really.
All right. Speaking of coaching, Pat, so did you see Barry Trammell's column this morning?
I did. We've talked about this sort of thing. How did Barry open it? It was kind of a witty way that he opened the column.
Well, he was basically calling Venables out on being late to the, you know, three straight press conferences.
Right.
He said he walked in 9 minutes late for his weekly press conference this week, TCU week. He said, no big deal. He's been late, you know, before, like 11 minutes late at Nebraska week, 23 minutes late, Kent State week, and so forth. And he's saying, hey, it's not a big deal to writers, but it might be a big deal to people at radio stations that are you know, scheduling that press conference
right.
in a
right.
certain segment each week and so forth, and they're scrambling to fill dead air. Anyway, his whole deal is saying he is a busy man, and has he taken on too much? I mean, so I don't know if you call it time management or priorities and so forth.
Combination of.
Yeah. So, and but everything, and that's why I wanted to ask you about mm-hmm. it, Pat. I mean, he talks about telephone calls, administrative meetings, press conferences, thousand other things that can tug at the man in charge. And you've been there, Pat.
Well, you know, Ted Roof, you know, is the defensive coordinator. Roof is a veteran guy. But, you know, Venables is a, for a first-year head coach, I remember watching it to a degree with Jimmy. Jimmy originally, when we came from Pitt down to here, you know, I was the defensive coordinator. But I know at one time, you know, Jimmy, we talked about this. And, you know, Jimmy said, hey, I've been really, you know, I've done this. I've been the coordinator for a number of years, and I'm good at it. And so I'm still going to be involved. But I watched Jimmy, you know, kind of grow out of it, for lack of a better way to say it. And then one year, seeing, I don't know who, Jimmy was talking to somebody, and it would have been 1982. And I was the defensive coordinator. We'd gone to the Independence Bowl. And then so Jimmy, somebody that Jimmy was talking to said, okay, offensively, put somebody that you trust the most in that room as the coordinator, and then you call the plays. Or Jimmy wanted to call the plays. He wanted to be like Osborne, mm-hmm. Craig, you know, and have.
Yeah.
So he moves me over to offense, you know, and then he calls the plays. And I saw Jimmy evolve out of that. Because what happens, of course, then he put me back over on defense, and we hire Larry Coker, and you know, all this. But it what happens is, invariably, when you haven't been a head coach before, you know, you get in there, if you're in a, you know, very important meeting, or you're talking about one thing, or you're making up the game plan and this, and the secretary sticks her head in there and says, President so-and-so is on the line for you. Mm. What are you going to say? You going to say, hey, tell him I'll call him back? No. You better go. You got to go. You got to go answer the phone. You know, all of a sudden, you know, somebody, she comes in there and says, chairman of the Board of Regents needs to talk to you. What are you going to do? You know, I mean, you're going to say, no, hey, I don't have time to talk to him right now. Nuh-uh. It's not the way it works. But what happens is you tend to slow down progress. And the other part of it is, you know, and people, if you haven't done this, it sounds, it's hard to really explain, but a lot of your time demands, you know, are making scripts. You know, is a coordinator, you know, does he make the team script up? And draw the cards. I mean, that when I say draw the cards, you're drawing the plays on cards to show the scout team. You know, and that's got to be precise, and you got to tell those guys where to line up. You got to coach the scout team about half the time. You know, either whether it's offense or defense, you get into that sort of thing. There's a script for inside run drill. There's a script for 7-on-7, which is a throwing drill, and there's scripts for team periods. You know, you don't just go out there and call plays. You can. But the vast majority don't just go out there and call plays. Everything is scripted. And again, you got to draw cards. Scripts are going to say they're going to be numbered. It's going to have down a distance. It's going to have personnel grouping. It's pretty intricate work. And you know, so what are we doing this? You're running what you think you're going to run during the course of the week, and or your base offense, or combination of, you know. So that takes time. Now, does it, in the case of Venables, is he, you know, he's got some input on this, and this. Now, who's making the scripts? Does he get involved with making scripts? Okay, here's what you call on this down and distance. Okay, here's what we feature in the inside run drill. You know, all these kind, and this is nuts and bolts football. So really, Trammell's right, and it's interesting to watch. You know, Gundy went through it up there. Remember when Mike?
Well,
used
he talks
to,
about that. He,
yeah.
Well, I mean, he said he the way he put it, he said OSU's program took off when Mike Gundy gave up running his own offense.
Well, I don't know that necessarily. I mean, they you know, they were still moving the ball, but. You know, you get into things like what we saw happen during the course of the even in the NFL. It happens in the NFL. If you're multitasking with the coach Nathaniel Hackett,
Well, he talks about that. He said last week he hired Jerry Rosper, who was retired from coaching on the Ravens staff. He hired him to be Denver's senior assistant to help with game management.
If you know, multitasking, if you're down there calling plays, either side of the ball, you know, and going back, what do you do during timeouts? Am I over there looking at the tablet, or what am I doing here? Am I tied into the tone of the game? So all of a sudden, you got to make a decision, you know, on do I accept the penalty? Do I not? Do we punt it now? Do we go for it? All these, I mean, you got to be tied into that as opposed to more of what play. You know, you can do it. Some guys, it's been done before. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it normally, my experience has been watching guys over the years that they kind of get weaned off of it. If you think in the case of Venables, I can spend all my time down here with this defensive unit, and I'm actually involved in the game plan part of it, or during practice, I'm down there, I'm trying to coach the linebackers or something. You ultimately find out what Barry's talking about, that the demands on things are too great for you, and you kind of get weaned off of it. Most, not everybody, but most guys do at some point. Barry's got very good points on this stuff.
When he says that OSU's program took off when Mike Gundy gave up running his own offense, he wasn't trying to imply that was a bad offensive coordinator or anything like that, but he went on to say that he goes, my impression is that Bob Stoops was less involved in center defense as the years passed. He said that's only a guess. What are your thoughts on that, Pat?
Well, I think in both cases, you know, Mike and him were winning up there, but I don't get into everything I talk with Mike about, but, you know, it's as far as being the CEO and running the entire program, really, to me, the head coach needs to be collegiately. The head coach needs to be more of a – you are the general manager. You're really a personnel guy. Now, if you consider yourself a play caller, and some of them do, you know, I mean, like you're talking about Lincoln Riley or Lou Holtz did it. But really, I mean, you can be a CEO and still, but really, you know, you have guys that are personnel guys, and then you have guys that really think they're really X's and O's guys. Now, you need to be, you know, effective at all of it. But on the same hand, no, I think Barry's exactly right. I would think that Bob Stoops probably weaned himself off a little bit, because you just find your time demands, you know, are so immense that in what do I got to feature on? And sometimes if you're not careful, you tend just to get in the way more.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you leave and come back and all of a sudden, okay, these guys have gotten on down the road and you've left to take a phone call from your chairman of the board of regents. I mean, you come back and they've made a decision on something. Well, now you got to backtrack and you slow
if
down.
You don't
progress.
Agree with that. Yeah. Then
all
now
that,
you're starting all over. And,
yes.
Well, and
yes.
On Lincoln Riley. So, and basically we were talking off there during the break, and you said, you know, it wouldn't be the first time it's ever been done if a coach gives up that. But it's like, I remember interviewing Lincoln Riley the first year, you know, after he was a head coach. And he said, you know, as long as he's coaching, he will call the plays. That's just something he's never going to give up. And that's what Tram was saying. He goes, Venables could make his life a whole lot easier if he would just let go of the defensive reins. I understand he has Ted Roof. He has a defensive coordinator.
Sure.
But he's obviously still heavily involved. But Tram's point is, if Lincoln Riley gave up play calling, then he wouldn't be Lincoln Riley. Or if Venables, you know, gave up his involvement in the defense, then he wouldn't be Brent Venables. That's the tricky part, right, Pat?
Yeah, and again, you know, a lot of times you do, your kind of your life experiences, you know, however you want to say it, change the way you view those things too now. They do.
Yeah.
You know, as you become more of a CEO, you know, you consider yourself more of a CEO than I do a play caller. You know, and all that. But those are very interesting, because that dramatically affects the day-to-day operation during the season. Mm-hmm. I mean, just on scripts, on practice schedules, on meetings. Who runs the meetings? You know, you get into all that kind of stuff. I mean, really, to me, in a perfect world, your quarterback coach is your coordinator, because he's the one, you know. I mean, I've seen it done other ways, and when you get another person sitting in there, then it just tends to kind of muddy things up a bit. In the same way defensively. Really, one of your linebacker coaches, depending on your scheme, one of your linebacker coaches ought to be the coordinator, because you delve in the front seven and the coverage. Craig. You know, so again, you're
I'm with you, Pat. Hey, listen, it just in life, as I've gone through, we're mm-hmm. both old guys who have seen a lot. And to me, the best executives are the ones who have figured out how to delegate. And
right,
I know it's hard. It's hard to give up control of something. But when you do and you hire someone really good, just as good as yourself or whatever, and put them in charge, and the whole thing gets better, which is what Mike has done at OSU to great success. And so I'm not saying that Venables, you know, should give up any involvement in defense. And Lincoln Riley's not – darn sure not going to do it. But you're saying you've seen a bunch of others that have and had great success is what you're saying, right?
Yeah. Switzer was a play caller.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I mean, all of a sudden, then
great
he
example.
Goes, and then,
yeah.
then Galen does it, and hey, it, you know, the whole
right.
deal. I mean, a
yeah.
lot of guys have been down that road, and ultimately, you know, I would bet, you know, I don't know Riley, I really don't know Venables, but just the way I view him, he'll end up becoming a little bit more. You can still be a high-energy guy and be a CEO. I mean, you can still yeah. control the tempo of everything that goes on out there without
right.
having to be a play caller, believe me.
Exactly. All right, Pat, the other thing we got going on this week, we got a hurricane hitting Florida, state of Florida, and hopefully everyone's are okay, and our thoughts and prayers go to the people down there. But how does that affect the game? And you've been involved in some of that, right?
Yeah, I coached in South Florida for 8 years. And, you know, here when we were with the Dolphins, now think of this, guys, we were still – that was when the Marlins, the baseball franchise, was still playing in Dolphin Stadium. Okay, Matt? All right. So now, this time of year, when the storm season hit, okay, you had a dirt infield, okay, which was roughly half the football field, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't even take
–
oh, my gosh, it didn't even take a hurricane type of deal. It just a big rain or whatever, and all of a sudden half your field is mud. Now, they've gotten away from that since they built their own stadium down there, but – you get into to this kind, you know, with people in these college games this week. There's been a bunch of them moved already. You don't want any of your fan base having to get out on the road when the roads are tore up and the power's out and you know, all these kinds of things. That's not right, you know. So either you just you move the entire ball game to another stadium. The NFL, I promise you, they're prepared. To go to other locales. I read something that said they weren't trying to plan that, but yes, they are. They have an idea of where they could go depending on kind of what the weather is as far as what one of the who was it they thought might go to Minneapolis and play? Was it
the Tampa Bay Bucs? I mean,
Tampa Bay,
right?
Yeah.
Because and they said even if they could play the game, if the stadium was okay to play in, and so they mm-hmm. don't want to use all the assets
right.
and so forth that they need, you know, for other things, in a situation like that. So they said they would move it to the Midwest, maybe to Minneapolis or somewhere like that. Yeah,
we got involved in one of these things, and it wasn't a hurricane deal, but it was the same thing. We're at Miami, we're playing the Chargers out there when all those wildfires were going on, and we fly out there, and all of a sudden, you know, you start getting there, you could see all this smoke everywhere, and we land, and the NFL league said leave the equipment on the plane because the Jack Murphy Stadium at the time. They were using it for a staging area for what you're talking about, Craig,
for
all the firefighters and everything. So they're not going to try to get into there. We check into a hotel, okay? They tell us and the Chargers, we're and the Arizona Cardinals, and they were on the road. They were playing Sun Devil Stadium at the time. And so we moved the entire ball game from San Diego to Phoenix or Tempe. And both clubs, we got up the next morning, flew to Phoenix, got into another hotel just to kill the day and meet and did that. And the Chargers flew down there, flew directly, as I remember, just we go to Arizona State's a stadium and bang, play the game in Tempe, you know.
Wow.
And I mean, you get into that kind of stuff, I'll promise you the NFL offices, they've got a plan for this thing. And, you know, they're not going to put the emergency people at risk. And then you're not going to ask somebody's fan base to get out on the road. And collegiately, it's the same way. You know, even if you got to postpone a game or do something else with it, they're that gets pretty hairy, obviously.
And so in the meantime, Tampa Bay is practicing down in Miami, and they might play a game in the Midwest.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Good for my career. Sent me to rehab, though. So that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.